Maternal mortality rates are rising in the United States, even as they fall in other countries. In fact, the U.S. is now the most dangerous place in the developed world to have a baby. According to the World Health Organization, the global rate of maternal death decreased 44% between 1990 and 2015. In some regions with particularly high rates, the decreases have been even more substantial. But here in the United States, that rate has actually increased steadily over the last 20 years. And in a recent USA Today investigation, which uncovered a lot of these findings, the blame in this article is placed at the feet of hospitals. But is that where it solely needs to be? Or are there policies, or the lack thereof, in certain states part of the problem? Joining me today to talk more about this is Dixie Weber, St. Luke's Women's Services Administrator, and Dr. Stacey Sieb, Executive Medical Leader for St. Luke's Women's Health. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is a big topic, and it has made a lot of headlines. And as we were talking before the program started, is that to say that hospitals are the main reason why we're seeing this, in a way, I think I would say is doing a disservice. Would you agree with that, Dixie?
Yes, I think I would. I mean, I think the important thing is to understand the why behind what is occurring within the hospital setting and for the community to have a conversation around how do we help women stay healthy throughout their pregnancy as well as while they're giving birth. Dr. Sieb, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think, if we look historically in the 19th century, maternal death rates were 600 or 800 per 100,000. We reached our best peak in the United States in the early 80s, I think it was, where it was 7 or 8 per 100,000. And then it's steadily increased now back to where we are today. I think there are a lot of things that contribute to the change in the statistic itself. I think as we move along, we're doing a better job of reporting when these events actually happening, recognizing how they happen. But there are some other health changes that have gone on over the years. I don't want to minimize the fact that I think we can always do better. You know, this number should always be improving if we can in any way.
And I would agree with that, because I think that there are times where when we think of, maternal death, a lot of times people think it's during childbirth. Mm-hmm. But there are many instances and issues that can happen after childbirth. And that was one of the things that came out in this investigation, especially when we talk about things like preeclampsia, which is, for people that don't know, extreme high blood pressure. And, I mean, one of the things that I experienced that after my oldest was born, he had to go to the NICU. After he was born, after an emergency C-section. And I want to make this very, very fast. I don't want to necessarily talk about myself. But we stayed in the hospital for 6 days. The day that I was being released, they always track your blood pressure, right? I'm about to get released and my blood pressure is through the roof. I felt fine. I felt completely fine. And I think back to if I had been released and if I had gone home, I would not have seen my OBGYN for 6 weeks.
Correct.
This is when women die.
Yeah, I mean, 1/3 of the deaths happen in that postpartum period. And I think for us especially, so I'm a nurse by background, and part of our role and responsibility is to make sure that we educate the people around that woman around what are the signs and symptoms that you need to be concerned about. Not only just physical signs and symptoms, such as high blood pressure, but also for postpartum depression. And what does that look like? And how do you know when to go to the doctor and when to call 911? And I think that's an important piece of the puzzle, is that education for people around that woman.
And Dixie, you've talked about this. You gave me some information and the fourth trimester.
Right.
And I've heard about the fourth trimester when it comes to babies, right? That there's really this fourth, that's why the babies don't sleep and that's why this and that's why that. But it extends to the mother. And do you think that's part of the issue, is that the baby is born and all of a sudden the care goes from mom to baby?
Yeah, I think absolutely. The focus, right, changes. And we assume that women will recover after that baby is born relatively smoothly. And what we really know is that recovery in the postpartum period is hard and your body has to be replenished. And as a healthcare team, it's our role and responsibility to have that conversation before you have the baby so that you know what to expect.
And one of the things that came out in this report is the considerable racial disparities in pregnancy-related mortality. And in fact, one of the listeners, Katie, I asked people to comment, and she said, if you're a woman of color, you're significantly more at risk. And Dr. C, that's correct.
That is true. And, mm-hmm. you know, we are ranked, I think, 13th in the mm-hmm. United States. Let's not be patting ourselves on the back for doing such a great job. We don't have such racial disparities here just because we tend to be somewhat of a more homogenous culture here. And, you know, that we still need to do a better job with that. I think, the death rate for black women is like 40 per 100,000, mm-hmm. whereas if you're Caucasian, it's 12 per 100,000.
Right. Yeah. That's a huge disparity.
Yes. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, there are some genetic issues around that, but I think there are also, you know, socioeconomic and social constraints mm-hmm. that need to be addressed as well. I would say within our state, the tough spots would be our American Indian population. You know, the Native Americans are probably the population that are at the most risk, and then Hispanic after that.
And why is that?
I think there's a lot of health disparity there just in general, and it can go anywhere from access to prenatal care, what your preconception health is like, you know, your support systems. You know, this isn't – if you really look at it overall, it's not all just about – you know, what happens in the hospital? You know, what are we setting mm-hmm. people up for when they do come in for care?
And that was the thing. So National Public Radio, if people had been listening or you can also read all of this, they really started this investigation at a national level about a year and a half ago and compiled not just data, but mm-hmm. stories of women who died either during childbirth or after. And there are some things that came out about that when it comes to, like we said, about preeclampsia. But, Dixie, there are other issues that can come up in that fourth trimester. And can we talk about what some of those are? Because even one of them, as you said, is mental health.
Right. Yeah. You know, what we're really seeing today is that the family infrastructure is different. We oftentimes don't have couples who have relatives that are nearby. So traditionally, you would have other women, either they're in your family or within your community, that you could lean on for support. But what we see is really a generation of new moms that's a little bit more isolated. And so from that perspective, planning for the fourth trimester also means that talking about, you know, who can give a little bit of respite so she can take a nap? Who can be there if she has a fussy baby and can rock that baby so that she can take a little bit of a time out from that moment? And those are things that we don't always plan for, and we need to plan for them. The other piece is recognizing that I think today women feel that they can do it all. Mm-hmm. And we know we can't. We have to ask for help. And so encouraging them to do so and have that conversation before the baby's even born is really important.
I'm speaking with Dixie Weber, St. Luke's Women's Services Administrator, and Dr. Stacy Seb, Executive Medical Leader for St. Luke's Women's Health. Dr. Seb, you are a high-risk high-risk OBGYN. Basically.
Maternal fetal medicine.
So for decades, hospitals and medical experts have, you know, I don't want to say they've blamed the rising maternal deaths and injuries on women for being unhealthy or overweight or pointed to risk factors, you know, maybe poverty or the age of the mother. That does play into this, correct?
It certainly increased the challenges for us and making sure that we've optimized the care for everyone. But again, it also kind of goes back to what resources do we have available when they do come to us, you know? I think the American College of OBGYN has a current big initiative around reducing maternal mortality. And they point out the fact that the leaders ahead of us are countries, you know, when we're talking, you know, first world countries, mm-hmm. developed countries, they all have pretty much global health care. They have very good tracking systems so that they have an idea of where their health problems lie so they can address those problems. So I think part of it is our nation and how we have set up our healthcare system and maybe the disparities that are going on. Mm-hmm. I think I saw that 40% of deliveries in the United States are covered by Medicaid, and the majority of those go away 6 weeks after delivery. So, you know, even things like making sure we're promoting, you know, adequate birth control mm-hmm. and, you know, just continuing good life practices. We're not necessarily doing that in the United States.
And when we come back, we're gonna continue this topic because there is a lot that we haven't gotten to. When we come back, I want to talk about what is called the AIM program because there are things that it sounds like Idaho could be doing better. Not necessarily hospitals, but the state of Idaho. Things like not having a maternal mortality review board and what that means to our state and what that means to mothers and how that could better serve people in our state. So we want to talk about that. Also, if you have questions or comments for my panel, please, you can ask them now. You can go to idahomatters@boisestate.edu. You can also tweet us, KBSX915. Use the hashtag Idaho Matters. And as we're going to break, I want to read you a comment from a listener. Maybe we can talk a little bit about this. This is from Danielle. She said, my last pregnancy resulted in postpartum preeclampsia. I am confident that one of the reasons I'm okay today is because I am fortunate to be surrounded by friends and family who are in the healthcare field. They provided great advice and terminology for me to use when speaking to my healthcare provider. And she talks about a nurse, and she says, this nurse quite literally saved my life. We have been talking about maternal mortality rates rising in the United States, why that's happening, what can be done, and what should be done. Joining me today to talk more about this is Dixie Weber. She is St. Luke's Women's Services Administrator and Dr. Stacey Seb, Executive Medical Leader for St. Luke's Women's Health. Before we went to the break, I read you an email from a listener, Danielle, talking about having postpartum preeclampsia and that, you know, she says a nurse was able to save her life literally by knowing the signs and the symptoms. And, you know, when you're pregnant, and maybe this has changed, it's been 6.5 years since I had a baby, but before my first pregnancy, I knew what preeclampsia was. Mm-hmm. I was never told until I had it postpartum that you can get this postpartum. Do we need to be educating people more about this?
I mean, I think so. As a nurse, I'm always pro-education, the more the better. Some of the things that we have done is we spent the last couple of years building what's called an iBirth app, which is all of our prenatal education and postpartum education up to the first year of the child's life in an app so that throughout your pregnancy, you can access information and, you know, be able to have that at your fingertips and not have to go looking for it. I think the other thing that's really hard is just the sheer time that you are in a doctor's office for your prenatal visits. I believe I read nationally, it's around 7 minutes that you have actual physical time with that physician. And so that education can't happen there. We have to do it in a different way.
And Dr. Seb, what about, you know, informing women about certain risks and complications that can happen postpartum in that so-called fourth trimester? And the reason why I ask that is standard of care is that women after having a baby don't see their OBGYN for 6 weeks. Yet we take the baby to the pediatrician 1 week postpartum for that well baby visit. But so many of these deaths seem to happen in that 6 week postpartum period. Does something need to change?
Absolutely. And, you know, the 6 week point, I think, is something a historical marker, shall we say, of what people used along the way to see women back after their pregnancy. Again, the American College of OBGYN trying to help align us and make us, better providers have now recommended that all women be seen at 3 weeks. Not only maybe even checking for blood pressure issues, but I think it comes back to the mental health issues mm-hmm. and making sure that we recognize that families are doing well. I think, you know, not only do we have maternal mortality issues, but, you know, how does that affect a newborn baby and, you know, if mom's not doing well?
And because it is mm-hmm. one of the most life-changing things you will go through when that first child arrives, for sure. One of the things that I was most struck by was that the state of Idaho does not have a maternal mortality review board. Why do we not have something like this?
So there are a lot of barriers to mm-hmm. sort of keeping track of a lot of the vital statistics in Idaho. I think people are very worried about liability issues, hospitals, providers, you know. And so sharing of information is sometimes guarded and people are hesitant to really you know, for lack of a better word, you know, air out the dirty laundry, you know, when in reality, if we had more information, we could help assist people. We would know mm-hmm. where the barriers are. Is it a death that could have been prevented if there were more resources in that county, you know? You know, exactly where are those issues? We have several options to participate in some national programs.
National programs that would actually lower these rates, but we cannot.
Yes, exactly. At this point, we either need to have a maternal mortality review board, which would be a great place to kind of correlate our information. But even if we had access to our health department for what we call de-identified discharge information. So it wouldn't have names or anything like that, but it would have the outcomes of pregnancies. And this goes to all sorts of health problems, not just maternal mortality. But if we could have that within our state, it would allow us to participate and we could move forward and, you know, mm-hmm. improve our healthcare.
Because Dixie, one of these national programs is the AIM program safety bundle. But can you tell us what AIM is? Because not just St. Luke's, but I would assume every hospital in the state of Idaho cannot participate in this national program because we do not have this maternal mortality review board, because you have to have that board, am I correct, in order to participate in these programs?
Yeah, that's a great question. So our understanding was that you do need to have the board, and this is really an opportunity for all the hospitals to come together and say, yes, we want to participate in data sharing and information sharing so that we can, like Dr. Saib said, look at population and disparities and better understand what's going on. So part of this is the AIM program allows us then to be benchmarked against other states so that we can kind of do a deep dive and say, what does it look like for women in the state of Idaho compared to women in Tennessee or, you know, women that are down south and see where it is that we are maybe have some opportunities and where we are doing really, really well, and we want to continue to do so. The AIM bundles are important bundles. We at St. Luke's are implementing the bundles, and I know our friends over at St. Al's also are very aware and have implemented the bundles, and I think it's important for us to know, at least in the Treasure Valley area, that hospitals are aware, they know what needs to be done, they're actively doing it, but some of it is infrastructure related, is the fact that we don't have a state mandate to have mm-hmm. to share that data.
And that's the thing, is this sounds like to me that this would have to come in front of our legislature, and they correct or no?
I'm not sure whether it really has to or not. I'm not much of a health and welfare expert to
right,
know what
correct.
Types of things they can actually right. do with or without legislation. But certainly if it is, I guess I would just implore everyone to, you know, speak up and say, please help us get this information, you know.
Because the point that you made, though, Dr. Seb, is that it goes beyond maternal health.
Right.
I mean, this could help in every aspect of healthcare and locating, okay, do we have a pocket of people that are sick in this county and why? Or, you know, why are more moms, you know, being affected in this part of the state? That would help.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I want to reassure everyone, this type of information doesn't reflect on the kind of care that people are getting.
Right.
It's more, you know, what are the health issues that are in that area? You know, the good news is when you have, say, 25 per 100,000 deaths, the number of providers that are going to be touched by an actual incident is few and far between. We're all creatures of our own experience. And so if you have more objective information, data that says, okay, we've got a pocket of high blood pressure here, we've got a pocket of diabetes here, or, you know, things have been happening that we can address, then I think we're going to set ourselves up for more success.
I'm speaking with Dixie Weber, St. Luke's Women's Services Administrator, and Dr. Stacey Seb, Executive Medical Leader for St. Luke's Women's Health. We're talking about maternal death rates and the fact that they are rising in the United States. Want to get to another listener comment. She said a nurse, Brenda, literally saved my daughter 6 years ago when she was pregnant and having trouble. They were ready to send her home, and this nurse listened to her concerns, stepped in, and could tell there were issues. She ended up in emergency C-section and a preemie baby, but luckily alive. I think the whole idea of listening to patients' concerns needs to be talked about. Too often, we think that healthcare providers know more than we do about how we're feeling, so our concerns aren't heard or taken seriously.
I think traditionally it's a very paternalistic environment within healthcare, and we absolutely have to listen to our patients. The best indicator of, you know, maternal well-being is their internal instincts about how they feel. And so we have to ask those questions. We have to be willing to listen. And, you know, for women's healthcare, it's a partnership. It should not be a provider or a clinical team making decisions for that woman. She should be at the table having the conversation with her, you know, physician and her partners to be able to make decisions that's right for her. And that's really important transition. And I think across the country, we have already started that transition and are well into it. But your listener brings up an excellent point.
And the idea that when we look at all of the states as a whole, that we do know that the state of California has been able to lower their maternal death rate by, I believe, 50% because of certain guidelines that they put in place. Can we do that? It doesn't seem like that the state itself made major changes, but it made major differences.
Yeah, I think there were some pioneers who have looked at the things that were going on there. They have a robust information infrastructure there, so they can, you know, see where the problems are and figure out how to address them in a way. You know, the CMQCC, which is the collaborative there that involves a lot of different stakeholders, has put together a lot of good practice things that have helped improve the recognition and treatment of issues when they arise, you know. And I think sometimes because, as I talked about earlier, we're products of our experience, you know, most of the times things are going to go really well with pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And it's when they start going sideways in that small percentage that it may or not be recognized, as I think some of the examples you pointed out today.
Well, and I believe, Dixie, you sent me some information that said something about when women hemorrhage, because that can happen, you know, quickly after delivery.
Yes.
And the statistics are something like 93% of those maternal deaths could have been prevented if the right procedures were in place, correct?
That's a great question. So, you know, when a woman hemorrhages after delivery, part of the puzzle that's so important is that you have to be able to quantify how much blood loss she's had. And so for many years, people just, quote unquote, eyeballed it and guesstimated what that is. And what most of us have done across the country is implement hemorrhage carts, which include, you know, a scale so that we can weigh everything, her clothing, her bedding, pads that she may use, so that we have an actual number and understanding of how much blood has she lost. And I think that has led to earlier interventions. It also has helped our nursing teams to be very alerted and have the information they need to be speaking to the clinicians and the physicians about what needs to happen when they're nervous or worried.
It sounds to me that changes are being made. It may be slow, but the healthcare industry seems to be taking this, I mean, seriously, especially when something like this comes out.
Yeah, I think there's a big spotlight on this now. And I think all of the national associations are trying to provide leadership and point us in the right direction. They're giving us a lot of tools that we can implement now all over. And I think, you know, I hope to see it get better. It's a big ship, and to turn it takes a lot of effort and a little bit of time. I feel like we've been really working in earnest now about the last 5 or 6 years on our safety initiatives, and we're getting there. So.
And that's what matters. I want to thank both of you for coming in and talking about this. It is, a tough topic to talk about, but something that we need to discuss and to break down so there's a better understanding of why this is happening. So thank you so much for coming in, both of you.
Thank you.
My guests today have been Dixie Weber, St. Luke's Women's Services Administrator, and Dr. Stacey Sebb, Executive Medical Leader for St. Luke's Women's Health. Thanks so much.